Boom, we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I am Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing today, Seth?
I'm good.
All right, you're ready to jump in. We have a bunch of news to discuss, and the big story right now that a lot of people want to know about is the highly anticipated update to the Model S and X program. We've been talking about it, what's going to happen with it. We kind of knew that something's going to happen this month, but we don't know the extent of it. Like with the factory shutdown, it looked like pretty clearly Tesla was looking to update the Model S and X. We knew that a bigger update was planned throughout by the end of the year. Whether Tesla was going to go incrementally with smaller update leading to a bigger one by the end of the year, or if Tesla plans to introduce a bigger update just right now, that's what was kind of unclear. It's still not 100% clear, but we have a much bigger indication that the update at the end of this month is going to be significant. Why is that? Is because Tesla instructed, according to sources that talk to Electric, that instructed their employees to liquidate their entire inventory of Model S and X, the entirety of it. That includes test vehicles, test drive vehicles, loaners, display cars, all kind of inventory that they have. They don't want to have any existing Model S and X. That's likely to happen. I mean, we haven't heard any kind of like big discounts or anything like that yet, but we knew that, like in Europe, for example, they announced price increases. So those don't necessarily affect the inventory vehicles. So that could help there. But with, it's the Osborne effect when more features is coming. Yeah. So with the Osborne effect, could be difficult to liquidate it. But I think with the Model S and X that have been in production for like almost a month at this point, it shouldn't be too hard to get rid of the last few inventory units that's left. But the fact that Tesla doesn't want any existing Model S and X in their inventory would point to a significant update coming at the end of the month, because Tesla would, like, we know, for example, with the Model 3 at the end of last year, there's been a bunch of updates coming out in the last few months of the year, and Tesla didn't go about liquidating the entire inventory of Model 3 because the changes were somewhat minimal. Combined together, they were significant, but individually or incrementally, they weren't that significant. Now with this move that this is doing for Model S and X, it could point to the expected bigger design refresh coming out. Now, of course, I see in the questions already, Raul Madeira asked in the comments, have you received any new info on the SNX refresh since your scoop from 2018? Update 10 renders. Yeah. So that was, we had basically what Tesla planned to do as a refresh from the interior back in 2018, planned for 2019. But now that's been like a year and a half delay on that thing so far. So it could have changed for sure. But I think that the bulk of it is going to be the same. So what we reported back then is, of course, the obvious change. The renders show that Tesla is going for an horizontal landscape display instead of the vertical one in the Model S and X. So that would simplify the software development of the user interface inside Tesla vehicles. Tesla is still getting an instrument cluster in front of the Model S and X driver, but a smaller one, a more, it's harder to see, still have the cleaner dash look, which also include the new, the fan system that goes along the dash from one way all the way to the other. And I think one of the most important thing is going to be a focus on the higher quality material, more luxurious materials, which is something, of course, that has luxury car buyers have been hammering Tesla about, that they think they are not on par with vehicles like from Audi or BMW and so on. So more luxurious high-end materials would make a difference there, and would potentially be one of the biggest differentiators with Model 3 and Model Y. We have a very minimal interior. If you have a more luxurious looking interior Model S and X, that would create a bigger differentiator. Cause I know that's something that's one of your pet peeves of yours, that you kind of see Tesla's lineup as you would prefer Model 3 and a Model Y to a Model S and X at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty old model. Like, it's pretty much the same thing that they had in 2012, right? They did the fascia upgrade somewhere along the line, but, you know, right after the Model X came out. But, like, you're pretty much in a 2012 car, and the interior is almost identical, which is kind of strange because Tesla seems to upgrade quite a bit. And they have upgraded.
The seats have improved a lot. I mean,
right.
I have a 2012 Model S, and you sit down in a 2020, or even like the seats have improved a lot before that too, but a more recent Model S, it's night and day in terms of seat comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because when you got those renders, the plan was, you know, like a year out or, you know, maybe something like that. And it's been quiet for a while. And we know, like, you know, kind of off the record that some folks at Tesla were upset about that. Coming out, so it wasn't like a wrong leak or something like
that.
Oh,
no, the leak was 100% right.
Right.
Like, and it's not like we were wrong on the timing, too. It just got delayed. We know what happened with Tesla in 2018, 2019. I mean,
right.
The company had issues ramping up the Model 3, and they just focused on that, and the Model S and X took some kind of backseat. Speaking of the backseat, I feel like it would be a great opportunity, Tesla, to focus more maybe also on a more luxurious backseat experience for Model S and X. You can have a pretty good one in Model X, would they have some kind of like captain seat, depending on the configuration you get. But I mean, I remember the executive and backseat that was briefly offered on the Model S a few years back. That was canceled pretty quickly. But if they could bring back something like that, that could be a potentially popular option too. Now, I mean, we're talking about the interior. The exterior is likely going to get some kind of update too in preparation for the Plaid version of the Model S. As for the powertrain, that's where things are a little bit murkier right now, because we know that Tesla plans to bring the new structural battery architectures to the Model S for Plaid, but that was planned for later this year. And though Elon sort of hinted that he might have been sandbagging us with that timeline, it might be coming sooner, but the Model S is not as well. It has become a much smaller vehicle program in the last few years, but it's not like a low volume vehicle either. So it would be a very demanding, I think, battery supply wise to switch right now the Model S to the 4680 and structural battery pack architecture. I think I don't see that happening, though. If it does, I would be happily surprised.
Yeah, what did you think of we saw a model S that was in Palo Alto, a blue one.
Mm-hmm.
You did a post on it a little bit ago. That one looked a little bit different. Do you think that's all the changes we'll see, or is that kind of just a road tester?
I mean, there was a few things. The body seemed a little bit wider, not too much.
Right.
Bigger rear diffuser. New headlights.
The diffuser was huge.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking.
Yeah, relatively speaking. But at the same time, like, there weren't any spoiler on it. So what I'm thinking is we might see that as like the new Model S, and then there would be a few more attachment, a few more design accents as a package for the Plaid version coming out later.
Mm-hmm.
That could make sense. But I think the big question that everyone has is that car going to have that structural battery pack in the 4680 cells, which, I mean, again, would be surprising. All right, let's move on to Tesla launching its own solar power inverter. So we kind of thought that was coming for a while now. I mean, I remember... I remember even when Tesla acquired SolarCity... I remember a comment from J.B. Straubel at the time, the CTO of Tesla, that was like, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for us to get into the solar business, because solar business is all around power electronics, and we have a giant expertise in power electronics to our own car inverters and our charging stations, and all those things are powered by power electronics. So, and of course, in a solar installation, the bigger power electronics is the is going to be the inverter. But Tesla always used the third-party inverters in their solar installations. They have been known to use the Delta inverter, and they use Solar Edge inverters at times too. And but now they have their own Tesla solar inverter design in-house. It was announced yesterday, or the day before that. No, yesterday.
It kind of just showed up. It wasn't really announced.
Well, they launched a support page for it on their website. And some new Tesla solar customers were told that they were going to get the new solar inverter as part of the installation. And so the installation already ongoing. As you can see right here, it looks very similar to the Powerwall design. But you have an inverter on it. It's a little bit smaller than the Powerwall 2, obviously. So if you look at the key features and specs here, Tesla says that it's built on the Powerwall 2 technology. Okay, nothing too crazy there. It has Wi-Fi, Ethernet, and cellular connectivity for over-the-air updates. So that might be one of the biggest differentiator. Like, not all inverters have this kind of over-the-air update capacity, which Tesla has, of course, a lot of experience with their cars, and also the Powerwall, which is designed to be integrated with this new solar inverter. It is available in 3.8 kilowatt or 7.6 kilowatt models, so that those are going to be the increments depending on the capacity of your system. So Tesla now offer a bigger system than that, but you could combine a small one and a big one, or two big ones, or whatever, depending on the size of your system. The efficiency, which is arguably one of the most important feature of a power inverter, achieved 97.5%, which is good. I mean, I think most inverter are around 97% right now, so 97.5.
Yeah, traditional ones are. SolarEdge's HD Wave is like close to 99%. They kind of took a big step up. That's why they're like the most valuable solar brand right now.
Yeah, I got challenged when saying that in the comments, saying that the 99% from SolarEdge is not accurate because they lose some power with solar optimizers. But my understanding is, like, if we compare inverter to inverter, it's 99 versus 97.5, and then if you use optimizers on top of it, then it would affect efficiency. Though SolarEdge argues that the efficiency is affected just 99.8 with optimizers, so it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, the optimizers are nice because you're able to use much smaller wire, because, you know, SolarEdge takes a solar panel which usually has like a, you know, 48 volt output or something like that, and it boosts it up to like 400 volts, which is actually the same voltage as Tesla vehicles and Powerwalls. So it does that at the cell, at the solar panel. So you can actually have much thinner wiring going into your inverter. So that's a bit of an advantage. I've seen that Tesla's is kind of compared to Delta's a little bit. And I don't know if it's true, but some people are saying it might just be a rebrand of Delta's hardware. Did you see anything like that?
I didn't see that accusation per se, though I know that most installation that Tesla does prior to this launch have been of Delta inverters. Mm-hmm. I don't know, do Delta inverters have 4-point trackers, though? That I'm not sure they do.
I'm not sure.
Because that can be useful, because you can have different entries for different planes of installation on the roof of and that can be especially useful for a solar roof tile installation, because that is most likely, because, I mean, most people will try, if you do a solar panel installation, you're going to have to group the panels more, the best, that's going to reduce your installation costs. And due to the size of the panels, you're more limited on where you can put them. While the solar roof tiles, that's the advantage of it. They're much smaller cells, and while the cells are not necessarily smaller, but the modules themselves are in tiles, making them smaller. So you can put them in different section of your roof and try to optimize like that. So that can be useful for that. You can have even a 7.6 kilowatt inverter and installation, solar rooftop installation could be spread out in different planes of your roof. So it could be very useful.
Hmm.
The warranty, they made it a 12.5 years, like exactly half of the average solar panel warranty, which is normally 25 years.
Yeah, it's weird. But, you know, SolarEdge is the same. So
I think SolarEdge is 12 years.
Is it?
Yeah. Which is, okay. They just didn't bother to do exactly the half of a solar panel. But
huh.
I mean, if those are well built, really, it's...
Yeah, and they're pretty easy to swap out. Yeah. I've had the inverter on my house swapped out. It took about 20 minutes.
Hmm. One advantage that I can see Tesla having with that solar inverter, though, if it's not, like you said, potentially a rebrand of an existing one, is potentially cost improvement, because they're already so proficient in making inverters for their cars and power electronics in general. They could leverage their manufacturing capacity there and scale it for the solar inverter and make some become more cost competitive there. That could be an explanation for venturing into this new product.
Yeah.
Though, of course, we cannot confirm that without having pricing or cost on information.
Yeah, it's weird that they don't have more information. I feel like solar installers would want to know more about this. I guess Tesla's installing it themselves, so
yeah, they're probably focusing on that. But they have been known, like the Powerwalls, now they sell to other solar installers, so maybe the solar inverter would become that, but probably it would take a while for that to happen. It would need to ramp up production. All right. Tesla Model Y. So as we did the podcast last week, Tesla started releasing the Model Y third row, and there were some pictures going out, but Tesla didn't release much. Now they have an actual video that's like, it looks like the support video that that they have normally on their page. It hasn't been up on the page yet, but Tesla reps have been sending them out to potential Model Y third row buyers. So it gave us our best look at the third row yet. Unfortunately, it doesn't show someone sitting in it, which is would be the most important thing. But you do get a better look. Oh, I'm on the 5 seat right now. The third row is right here. Yeah. So it shows it sliding here, which is an important part of so you not only get a third row, but your second row change. It now slides back and forth to facilitate entry to the third row, and also make someone in the third row more comfortable, which they're probably going to need. And it's also reclining too. So if you have no one in the third row, you have like more reclining gives. So yeah, you see that this is how much it goes back here in order to let you in, which look somewhat sufficient. Like it moves a lot, and it moves higher up too. Which gives you a lot of room. But the once that done, like, I mean, you see, like, you just, did you catch that? As you lift up the headrest, it went like past the actual trunk here.
Yeah.
So you can lift it up that high, but not when the trunk is closed. They just saw the USB-C input that you have, the USB-C plug.
I wonder if you can get those seats that recline if you don't have the third row. Like, it would be nice to have rear reclining seats, just generally speaking.
Yeah, that's a good point. You see that it can fold all the way flat too. That you already have, the tub you already have. That's nothing new. But yeah, I mean, it looks extremely well designed. It looks certainly more full fledged than it was at the launch in 2019. But yeah, I mean, it looks more for children and maybe small adults.
Like really small adults. Like, I don't think it feels like those back seats are for kids only in my book. And I would also add that you're going to feel pretty claustrophobic back there, because you have the second row seats, which are pretty high. If there's people back there, you can't like just get out when you need to get out.
Oh yeah, so that's a problem for a lot of people. Yeah.
So, and then you don't have a lot of height either. I think I saw might have been a Chinese post about the, I should have shared this with you, but they got in the back seat and there was a guy, didn't look very tall, and he was like right up against the glass, and then his wife or girlfriend or whatever next to him, and she had like about that much room between her head and the glass. So
yeah, I'm not that much concerned about the height thing. I mean, obviously when we saw the headrest, if you're more than like 5'7", 8", it's not going to be comfortable, but the leg room is probably the tougher thing. But at the same time, I mean, it doesn't make it a bad option. And if you have a family with four kids, for example, then that's it's very viable solution. Like,
yeah,
especially if you have kids also that are sitting in the second row seat, that means you can bring the second row seat much more forward, right, and then split the room better with the kids in the back seat. So it's we're all glad that it exists at least. We just like the whole like seven adult thing that Tesla first brought up. We're just gonna forget about that. All right, still about the Model Y, and we just saw the tub in the Model Y. We now know that Tesla moved from that two piece casting on the back, the giant casting that he did, to a single piece rear casting. So if you remember a while back, Tesla had this massive casting machine that they shipped to Fremont, and they even built it outside. It was so big that they had it built outside and built some kind of roof around it. It was so big, and that was in September, and they started producing like this. I mean, what you see here is the Model 3 rear underbody, where you have 70 parts at the back here, welded and used bracket to put it together, versus the Model Y that used two parts, two bigger casting parts. But Tesla always said that they would move to a single part casting later on. Instead of having a bracket in between here to join the two, it would be one single giant piece produced with this new giant machine. Now, an owner of a new Model Y, well, not that new, I mean, end of December it was delivered, so that would give us some kind of time frame of when they actually started using that piece of casting. He removed the lining in his trunk and found a good look at the underbody rear casting piece, and as you can see right here, there's no bracket in the middle joining the two pieces. This is one giant piece of casting there. So Tesla now figures that they have it right, and it's good enough to be installed in new vehicles. So it's another milestone towards this use of bigger casting parts, which have been, of course, something that Tesla has been pushing a lot for. After installing that giant new machine in Fremont, they ordered a bunch of them for Berlin, Shanghai, and Texas. So that's going to be definitely a trend for Tesla to move to bigger casting parts.
And that casting thing is a German casting?
Italian machine.
Italian. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. Like, it does facilitate manufacturing if you have fewer parts to assemble the vehicle, sure, with it. Like, I mean, I'm not a manufacturing expert, but that just sounds like common sense. But apparently it is extremely difficult to cast complex large part like that into single piece. So Tesla had to work with tuning the aluminum that they'll use for that part, so that they have a perfect alloy that is malleable to be twisted. Like, I mean, this thing is, I mean, it's complex part right here. Like, it's not a
right.
It's not a sheet of metal. Like, turning a sheet of metal into that thing, it looks kind of crazy, but they can do it now with this specific alloy. It's impressive.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll ever be able to like 3D print that kind of stuff, or is it? I don't know if 3D printing is strong enough to be that part. So
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the technology in 3D printing has improved so much in the last decade that we could get there. All right, now in the not so good news regarding Tesla. The whole MCU fiasco is still ongoing. So the last time we left it at, I mean, a quick recap for people who don't know, don't remember, the MCU, EAMC memory thing that happened with older Tesla vehicle that have the older MCU, the media unit, pre-2018. Basically, all of those MCU will eventually fail because of the writing error on the EMC memory unit. And some of them are failing sooner than others. And it's a real problem. There's a defect. Tesla admitted that there's a defect. There's a problem that they tried to patch, but they haven't been able to fully patch. And in response to that, to the a lot of error with it, they offered an extended warranty on it. So some people thought that would be the end of it. Tesla offered an extended warranty. You can just get it changed under that. But the truth is that it's not as easy as that. A lot of people have been reporting that they tried to get their MCU change under the warranty because they have been having the problem. And Tesla has been difficult to deal with in a lot of occasions regarding that, trying to differentiate, claim that it's not due to the memory issue, even though it has the same symptoms as the memory issue. So we reported that NHTSA got involved too. By the way, NHTSA got involved before Tesla offered the extended warranty thing. So let's not get confused on how it happened. Like, obviously, because that thing has been going on for years, really. And Tesla was very difficult to deal with regarding that. NHTSA got involved. They offered the extended warranty thing. And, but again, a lot of owners are having issues doing it. Also, a lot of owners are like, an extended warranty is not enough. There's a defect in your project that you delivered. You should replace that product, which I think is fair. But NHTSA's involvement, normally it's not like it's when it's regarding to safety. And, but they do have a claim for safety here, because even though the media unit is, the media unit is for media, it's for infotainment normally, but with Tesla, there's a lot of things that goes through that. And things like the warning chimes get through that, so you don't get there anymore. So that's part of the safety issue. And one thing that a lot of people don't know, even the turn signals can be affected if your MCU unit is down. And I actually experienced that last weekend. And it's not even with the older MCU, it's with a brand new MCU. So that same problem exists with that. Not the memory problem, but the if your MCU is down, you have a problem with your turn signals. So I was driving on the road and I wasn't connecting to the LTE. Like I couldn't get traffic information on my car because for some reason the LTE didn't connect.
So you rebooted?
So I rebooted, which is not the first time I've done that. Not a problem. You reboot and thing. But for some reason, the reboot took forever and I was driving. So I thought, I was on the highway at first. So I thought, all right, no problem. It's going to take a minute or two max. I'm going to be on the highway. There's no problem if I don't have my screen on. I was in my Model 3. But then it took like 6 or 7 minutes for it to reboot, which got me a little bit nervous. And I had to exit the highway at that point. So I was on the road and I was using my turn signals, and my turn signals would take forever to turn on. Like I would put them on and they wouldn't come on until like, I don't know, I didn't calculate, but I felt like 5 or 6 seconds before they would actually turn on, which is of course dangerous. Yeah. So
when my MCU was gone from my Model X, I had no turn signals.
Turn signals at all?
Yeah. I don't think so. I remember telling, because, you know, I was talking to the Tesla rep and I was like, hey, you know, I need to get this repaired soon. And they're like, well, we can get you in like 3 or 4 weeks. I was like, this is kind of a big deal. It's not just like the screen, which, you know, the screen is a big deal, but like there was other components like heating and cooling and that kind of stuff that was like,
which was like, is arguably a safety issue if you're cold as hell.
Right. So I was like, hey, like, can we do this sooner? And then they put me out so far that it was, you know, to that time to get my new car. So I just brought it in with the broken MCU.
Yeah. And to resell it, I'm sure they put a new one in there.
Oh, of course.
But people have been having issues trying to get a new one for the extended warranty. And now NHTSA got involved. The investigation started last year. But now the news this week is that they issue a letter to Tesla telling them, you gotta do a recall for this, which a lot of us have been expecting. But normally automakers will do the voluntary recalls. In this case, they're trying to twist Tesla's arm to actually do the recall. And I mean, at this point, it looks bad for Tesla to be resisting that, because in the discussion with NHTSA, they admitted that there's a up to 30% failure rate of the MCU right now, which is extremely high, of course.
But kind of anecdotally, we've heard quite a bit of people having the issue. So,
oh yeah, and they admitted to NHTSA that eventually all the MCUs will fail because of the mistake. But I mean, a lot of them will last long enough that they will be past the warranty, even the extended warranty now.
Right.
So, but this is like technically it's not design. It's a defect that shouldn't happen. So even though it's the defect that could last long enough for the warranty to be okay, it's still a defect that shouldn't exist. So yeah, I mean, I don't know why Tesla is fighting that. It doesn't look good. And, it's one of those things too, like when I report on that and I get the Tesla fan calling, I saw the comments. I think you just deleted them, like calling fear me. I'm spreading fear and doubts. And this is an old story. First of all, it's not an old story. It's happening. A lot of owners are having issues, and I've seen the Tesla ready and the Tesla mania, whatever they're called. Like they report on the issue, like, oh, it's done. Like NHTSA is going after Tesla for no reason. It's not no reason. There's plenty of owners that are currently having these issues and they need it fixed, and Tesla is not fixing it. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Tesla, but you need to, when they do something wrong, and this is clearly something wrong here, you have to call it out for what it is. And I mean, it's so weird because also, Now the argument for the safety thing is becoming more obvious. Normally Tesla is big on safety. If safety is affected, we're going to jump on it. But for this one, they're not so quick to jump on it, which I'm kind of disappointed about.
Yep.
So until the 27th, Tesla has until the 27th to respond to the letter. NHTSA can force a recall, of course, but they're sort of playing it nice right now. They are telling them, you should do a recall. If you disagree, give us the exact reason in details why you disagree, and we go from there. But I mean, with the discussion that NHTSA already had with Tesla, it looks like they're going to force a recall at this point. All right. Now let's move to GM's Bright Drop. So you were on that presentation this week, Seth. Big CES showdown from GM. What is Bright Drop? It's a new company. It's a division of GM.
Yeah, it's like Chevy or Cadillac, I guess, or Buick. Kind of an interesting name. Seems a little bit techy, I guess. But basically, they want to sell to companies, logistics type companies that want to kind of use, you know, technology to get, you know, all shipping things from the last mile to, they say, the first mile to the last mile. So, you know, FedEx is their first customer, obviously a big logistics organization there, probably, you know, one of the top three or four in the US or globally. So they have two products they announced. One is this like movable pallet that goes 3 miles per hour. And that's fine. That's nice. I think those already exist. I've even seen pallets that like climb up walls and do other cool stuff. So, you know, the technology isn't amazing there, but the vehicle was actually pretty impressive. You can see the FedEx truck on the story, and they had kind of a more generic labeling as well.
Solutions that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's the pallet. You know, like that's cool and fine. And if it integrates, that's great. But like, you know, we're not talking about groundbreaking technology there. The delivery truck is pretty cool. 250 miles of range, which seems like they should have more options. Like, you know, if you're delivering in a city, you probably need like 40 or 50 a day. And if you're, you know, driving, you know, suburban routes, maybe you need closer to 250. And if you're doing long haul, you obviously need a lot more. So, you know, this having that range seems kind of, you know, strange. The other thing that was kind of weird is the CCS combo charging speed of 120 kilowatts, which, you know, it's faster, obviously, than a Chevy Bolt, like twice as fast. But It's not terribly fast for vehicles of this size that theoretically would, you know, want to continue working. You know, it's expensive to be sitting at a charger for 2 hours.
And it's using the new Ultium battery system, which we presume would have a much higher capacity, charging capacity.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, that's a little bit concerning, I think. You know, we kind of did some back of napkin math. It's probably around a 200 kilowatt hour battery in that thing. And if it's charging at 120 kilowatts, you're looking at like almost 2 hours of charging to go from zero to full. So, you know, that's not great if it's, you know, in the middle of the workday.
Yeah, but at 250 miles, I mean, like you said, it's not great for long distance deliveries. It's probably going to be more, but at the same time, it's an overkill for like city urban deliveries.
Right.
But for urban deliveries, I mean, it's more probably they just want a kind of a large backup on it. And for that, I mean, it makes sense. You do your deliveries in the morning and maybe go park for lunch, charge the car, charge the van a little bit, go back up, and then minimal charging at night or something.
Yeah.
You know what the van reminds me of? The Arrival van that also has a deal.
Yeah, you mentioned that. It is similar, similar form factor, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as tall as the Rivian vans.
Yeah, the Rivian vans is also like smaller, I think. They're just overall smaller.
Yeah, and then Ford E-Transit, I guess, is also a little similar in size. Yeah, anyway, good news. GM stock was up like 20% or something on the news.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they kind of need that these days.
I mean, the deal with FedEx is significant. And I mean, they already plan to put 500 trucks on the road this year alone.
Yeah, their marquee customer. And they said they had a bunch of other customers online. It was also interesting. Pam, what's her last name? Fletcher was the kind of running the show here. They just hired a new CEO to be head of the organization, but she's the one who led the Chevy Bolt program. So you know, she's got obviously a lot of electric vehicle expertise. It was just interesting to see where she wound up. We kind of figured that she would be, you know, doing the, you know, other Hummer stuff or the Ultium stuff, but this is where she wound up.
Well, that has a potential to convert a lot of gas mileage to electric mileage.
So. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. It is exciting. So that was one part of their announcement at CES, but GM used CES for a lot of EV announcement, and they also talked about the Cadillac Celestiq.
Yeah, I think they were saying Celestiq.
Teak, Celestiq.
Yeah, a QUE or something.
So, Cadillac Lyriq is coming soon. Right. I mean, I think deliveries are planned for later this year or early next year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But that car is going to be sort of a flashy car, and it's not coming until 2025.
Yeah, but
they started teasing it already.
That was quite frustrating. It's also crazy. So they showed off the Celestiq at the GM EV day,
mm-hmm.
which, man, I wish I had a camera for. Mm-hmm. And this thing is like, the Celestiq is a crazy looking vehicle because it's like, it's low, but it's wide and long. Like it reminds me of like a Citroën station wagon. Like it's just a weird looking vehicle. And they're showing off the moonroof here. But it's just a crazy looking vehicle. I look forward to whatever this turns into.
Yeah, I mean, what you saw is probably an early concept. I bet if it's 5 years out at that point,
because
that was early last year that you saw it. But they released a new teaser today, so you can see the wideness to it right there already, just with that fender. And like you said, it's low to the ground. You can see that just from the fender, really. But the focus on the teaser was the roof thing, which they have something called smart glass. So there's four different quadrants on the roof, and you can click. This is the inside. You can click on each of those quadrants, and it will change your own section of the roof. like that. You can see right here.
That's cool.
So you can have different level of shades depending on that for each passenger inside the vehicle. They also talked a little bit about the infotainment system, but they didn't release any image of it. They say that the driver and the front seat passengers will enjoy a pillar-to-pillar free-form, don't know what that is, display with active privacy to help mitigate driver distraction, while rear seat passengers have personalized entertainment screens. Okay. Console screens between seats in the front and back will separate individualized comfort settings from intermittent display to minimize distraction. So you're going to have a screen for your like seat settings and whatnot, and a screen for your entertainment, one for each person inside the car.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I'm not a huge legacy Cadillac interior person, but both the Lyric and the Celestiq interiors were like really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we've seen some of the back pictures of the Lyric. Like, mm-hmm. the people sitting in the back seat have almost more luxury than the people driving and the passenger. Mm-hmm. It's really something to behold.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Now let's talk a bit about EV investment news. So the SPAC frenzy for electric vehicle space is still ongoing. So after QuantumScape, Fisker,
Nikola
did it, Lordstown did it, everyone's doing it. Now you have Lucid that is apparently considering it, and Proterra was announced it. So there's a little difference here. The Proterra deal looks like it is happening. It hasn't happened yet. It's still in the process of closing, but they are joining force with publicly traded. For those people who don't know, the SPAC deal is the SPAC is like a blank check company that's already trading on the stock exchange. And a SPAC, the SPAC deal involve a private company that is the real business. So in this case, Proterra, which is a private company that sells and builds battery electric buses. And they will merge with that publicly traded company in order to become publicly traded in the aftermath of that deal. And that deal also involve, normally that blank check company has money in the bank that becomes an investment into the private company, and they can raise more money too at the same time to sort of a public offering. So in that case, that's going to be $415 million that's going to go to Proterra's pockets. And it's going to have a total, and this is kind of a good deal. And that's why I jumped in this week into the stock. And when I saw that, $1.6 billion valuation with over $800 million investment in cash on end after that. So
wow, it's only an $800 million enterprise value.
Yeah. So it's a good deal, I think, especially considering, unlike a lot of the other SPAC deal, like Lordstown, like Nikola, like Fisker, even arguably QuantumScape too. It's a company that already delivering product and having revenue and everything. I doubt that they are profitable yet, but they are delivering a lot of electric vehicles, which is cool. So,
yeah. Did you know Daimler is actually partial owner of?
Yeah. They did invest in them, which I mean, Daimler Trucks produce a lot of buses and a lot of EV duty vehicles. So that's interesting on its own. Also, Shantmat and I cannot pronounce his last name, Palihapitiya. Apologize for that. Who's a longtime Tesla investor is also part of that deal. Fidelity Management and BlackRock, who are also big Tesla investors over the years, are part of that deal. So obviously a big reason behind this pack frenzy in the AV space is, of course, Tesla's success on the public market. So all the companies are want to replicate that, but, it's both risky, of course. I would be careful getting into those deals, obviously. But at the same time, it's a good thing for electrification because, I mean, no matter how much Elon used to complain about Tesla being public, being a pain in the butt, they actually raised a ton of money on the public markets to help accelerate Tesla's acceleration of the electric vehicle adoption. And the higher this the value that company, the easier it is to raise that money on the public market. So if the same thing happens with those company, they're going to be able to raise more money and accelerate their plan. So I think this is, even though it's a risky investment, I mean, it's one of those stealing that I don't feel too bad, even if there's overvaluation, if there's like overbuying on those companies. I think ultimately it will serve good. So on top of that, oh yeah, the Lucid thing is not a done deal. So this one you have to be more careful with it. So Bloomberg reported that they are in talks with Churchill Capital Corp. 5, which trades under the CCIV. CCIV ticker. And, so this is just a talk. It's not an announcement of a deal, even though the SPAC deal with Proterra could technically not close for some reason. But I mean, at that point, it's reliant, of course, on SEC approval, but, the shareholders voting for the mergers and of course, all shareholders on both sides of the deal benefit from it happening. So the deal with, Proterra, which trades under the ACTC ticker on NASDAQ, is a lot safer. But this one with Bloomberg, it's still in talks. They haven't closed the deal yet. And what they're talking about is a $15 billion valuation, so a lot more expensive, but especially for a company that hasn't delivered anything yet. But of course, Lucid is considered one of the more serious startups in the EV space. The Lucid Air, we were extremely impressed by the spec and price point they were able to achieve. It's going to be a very interesting addition to the luxury segment in terms of battery electric vehicles. And it even started a competition with Tesla. I mean, Elon sort of acknowledged their achievement with the Lucid with being more competitive with the pricing. Of course, the new Model S could change a lot of that, but it still remains to be seen. I mean, if the deal goes through anyway, it probably won't close until the Lucid Air starts shipping. So that's probably a good deal, but it's a bit of a gamble, really. The person behind it is one of those like big finance guy at Morgan Stanley used to be, or Morgan Stanley or the other big one. I'm not sure, but there's a lot of money behind it. So that would be good for Lucid too, because apparently there's like $2 billion in that fund. So if they can get $2 billion out of that $15 billion valuation deal, you could accelerate the plans a lot, but they apparently don't need it to deliver the hair. I mean, the $1 billion that the Saudis give them, that's already good enough, apparently, to start delivering the hair. And the construction has been done at the factory anyway. It's now building up the production capacity. So there's that. All right. If you guys have any questions, put them in the comment section right now, because we have one more news item and then we're going to jump into the questions. And the last news item is about Hyundai and the IONIQ 5, which is about to be unveiled next month. There was one more teaser, which revealed a lot more of the vehicle. You have three images right here. So the front of the car, the back of the car. I mean, it looks very similar to that Concept 45 that they say that they're going to look like. It's going to look like you can see the resemblance. Looks like a cool looking crossover. They also released a few things about the design here. So eco-friendly finish. And the front end, let's just talk about the design here. 20-inch wheel.
Reminds me of the Polestar a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that. Polestar too. Mm-hmm. Then they previously announced that there's going to be a bi-directional charger on the car, so you're going to be able to power things out of the vehicle.
That's great.
And they released a series of teasers for that features this week around camping with the car. So going camping and powering things like cooking, like a sound system, and running. I'm not going to play the clips here. They're nothing crazy. But they show a little bit of what you can do with the bidirectional charger, basically. And then there was one more thing that they released with the 5-minute challenge thing, which was kind of weird. It's just a trailer for it, as if there's going to be like a movie or an episode about it. Or I don't know what it's going to turn into. But the whole premise of it is like they have these four individuals here that are dressed like race car drivers, and they're going to see how much charge you can get out of different devices, like a cell phone and a laptop and the Ioniq 5 in 5 minutes. And for the Ioniq 5, they say it's going to be 100 kilometers, which is 62 miles in 5 minutes. Of course, that doesn't mean anything really. If it's at 0% charge, if it's 100% charge, that makes, less than 100%, I guess, it makes a big difference. But at the same time, while that doesn't mean anything, the specs, like we reported a few weeks ago, actually already leaked. And we have a much more variable metric here that's at 20 to 80% charge, which is a much more usable way to look at charging in 15 minutes, which that's good. I mean, it's more than good. So it's pretty great, actually. Because that's most of your charging that you're going to do. Like if you're going on a road trip, you do 200 miles, for example, start at a stop at a charging station. In 15 minutes, you go from 20 to 80% and you're back on the road. That's awesome. We already discussed the other specs on the car, but the full unveiling is going to happen next month. So we're really excited about it because this is going to be the first significant effort in electrification, I feel like, for Hyundai. I mean, they do have the Ioniq, the actual Ioniq without a number on it. Like, this is a bit confusing, but, that was a nice car and everything. Very efficient car. We were impressed about that, but it was still kind of a compliance car. It was built as like three different powertrains with gasoline powertrains, plug-in hybrids, and full electric. So,
yeah, Hyundai just overall hasn't delivered enough vehicles for us to kind of buy that they're really into the electric vehicle space.
Yeah,
it doesn't. They're not. They'll deliver them to, I think, all 50 states, but they're definitely not making an effort.
It's not on the lots. It's not on
the lots. If you go to Ohio, for instance, you're not going to be able to find one. And you can order one and it'll get there eventually, but they're really not pushing them.
Yeah, you can go to Norway, for example, and you're going to see a ton of Konas.
Right.
Konas EVs everywhere. But... I think the Ioniq is a more, and I think Hyundai admits that themselves. I don't know, but they say that the Ioniq is going to make them one of the world's top EV manufacturers. So
yeah, and we have to say, like, from a technology standpoint, both the Kona and the Ioniq before this one have been pretty much Tesla's only competition in terms of efficiency. The Ioniq for a long time was the most efficient EV, per kilowatt, miles per kilowatt hour. So, maybe they have some cool stuff up their sleeve here. This one doesn't look terribly aerodynamic, but, maybe they can get, 300 miles out of a 70-ish kilowatt hour battery, which would be similar to a Model 3 or Model Y.
Yeah, I mean, they had been achieving this efficiency on smaller battery packs, so it would be interesting to see what they do with that. Yeah, because it's a different vehicle on a new platform, on a new electric platform for Hyundai. So we'll be interesting to see if they stick with that efficiency trend that they've been on. All right, let's jump into the questions.
All right, here we go. Let's see. We got... would you get a long range Model 3 or a standard range Model Y? I guess that were the two, from I Love You.
Oh, good question.
I mean, me personally, I would get a standard range Model Y just for my needs. And I'm sure that's,
I mean, assuming I don't have any other car, I assume that's what he's saying. Cause I mean, because I've pushed my Model 3 to its range, like doing some longer distance and whatnot. And I live in a place where winter affects the range a lot during the colder season. So standard range feels a little bit short for me. But at the same time, I mean, the bigger form factor can be very useful.
Right.
It's a dilemma.
Toss up. All right. Have you received any new info on the SX refresh since your scoop from 2018?
Yeah, we discussed that earlier.
We talked about that a little bit. The Cybertruck dual motor start shipping. No idea. Year
2022. My best guess.
All right. All right. We talked about the SPAC deal for Lucid, but what's going on with Faraday? They got a SPAC deal.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if it's confirmed that they have a SPAC deal, if they're still in talks. I mean, we might have an interview on the podcast soon with one of the heads of Faraday Future, so we can discuss that. But unless it's not announced officially, because of course they wouldn't discuss it if it's unannounced. But yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, I would before I venture into like Faraday Future being on the stock market, I would like more clarity on the situation on deliveries and whatnot. But
yeah, it would be good to have some vehicles on the road for sure. So how significant is the Tesla in-house inverter? We talked about this a little bit.
It was significant for Solar Edge. It dropped 10% today.
You know, I was going to say, I forgot to mention that, but I think it was actually 15% today.
Really? Yeah. It was 10 when I looked.
Yeah, it's, let me just do
it. But to be fair, Solar Edge is up like 200% over the last year or something. So it's not like they're massive a setback for them. But I mean, it looks like that's what was driving the downward pressure on the stock today.
Yeah, 15.8% today. Wow. 53 points. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Douglas Press, how did the new casting machines manage to get the metal thin and light enough? Sounds incredibly difficult to cast, say, a 16-gauge sheet of metal.
That's that goes over my head. I couldn't tell you. Like I said, I know that they developed a new alloy specifically for that. So that has to play into it. But and also the machine is just, I mean, it's as big as a house putting pressure on a piece of
metal. Right, I'm sure it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
To do things it needs to do. All right. What about the exterior? I think we were talking about the Model S X refresh.
Yeah, talked about it a little.
Yeah. Will the rear seats fold up? I'm assuming that's about the Model Y third row.
No, I think that was still about the Model S and X, which, I mean, obviously, I think it will.
All right.
Unless it's maybe we're talking about the executive seat. Maybe the executive seat wouldn't fold.
Oh, yeah.
That's not out of the ordinary. I mean, anyway, if you have an executive seat, it's normally, it's made like ultra luxury. You don't use that car to like
James
bring
Reach.
Like piece of plywoods or something.
James Reach says, do you expect the Plaid S to come out prior to the refresh of the other S variants?
Well, that's what we thought was going to happen first, which put some doubts into the timeline of the updates to the Model S in 2021. But what it looks like right now is that I think we're going to see, like, just to give reason to Elon Musk that Tesla never does refresh. I think it's going to be gradual to a degree, but I think something significant is going to start at the end of this month. Explaining the what everything we've been reporting in the last few weeks.
Yeah, they don't shut down. Tell people to wait a long time in Europe and liquidate inventory for a little bit.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean the plans have come relatively sooner than maybe Elon talked about, but after initial updates to the rest of the lineup.
Boss Music asks, where is the Patreon link? You can find that in the story on the website. Mm-hmm. Do you think the new solar inverters will allow for charging power walls with DC instead of inverting two times? I don't think that's the case. Although in the future, I'm hoping that Tesla kind of has like a whole DC subsystem for charging cars, charging power walls, and managing the solar, and then switch over to AC when you need to hit the house. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about that for a while, and I remember Elon even like hinting about it back after the Powerwall 2, no, or when the Powerwall 2 was unveiled. He was thinking about the combination of a Powerwall and charging station for Tesla vehicles. Yeah, always made a lot of sense. Like Matthew says here, like you're taking DC powers, you're converting it to AC, but you technically, if you have a charger that if you have a car that uses DC powers and a battery, it would make sense not to do that conversion. And if the inverter would also have a charger, it could let that through as DC power. I don't know what the holdup is there. Like if it's tested, I mean, the use case is not that huge. Like you will have charge it. That would change a little bit of your charging habits. Normally people charge their car at night. And now you would charge a car directly off solar power without changing the current. So, but at the same time, I mean, with the whole coronavirus thing, a lot of habits have changed. Like people now, a lot of more people work from home, and it looks like even past the pandemic, a lot of that could stay around. A lot of people are finding out that it's efficient to work from home. So maybe like your car could be at home more often and charging it would make more sense. Maybe even bi-directional charging now would start to make more sense, and Tesla would start moving to that vehicle to home technology. So I think there's still room for some kind of integrated Tesla Powerwall inverter and charger. Yeah, I would really like to see that happen.
And so I don't want to digress too much, but do you ever see like a day where you don't have to charge a car from AC, where you can just charge it from DC? Because you're basically driving around with this big, like, you know, 40-pound inverter in your car that switches AC into your car to DC. I mean, you could have that like in your trunk or whatever and take it out when you don't need it, or put it in if you're going to need it. But like if you're charging DC at home and you only need to charge like at superchargers, which are DC, then why are you carrying around this, you know, big heavy metal thing? You think that'll happen in the future?
I mean, I doubt it, because just look right now at the number of AC charge points you have versus DC. Like there's a lot of catching up to do.
Sure.
I mean, you would have to have that device that don't even exist yet.
Right.
You would have to have it have an adoption rate that would be quite insane to catch up to the AC charge point, because technically every power outlets in the world is an AC charge point for an electric car.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that you're driving around this, you know, I don't know, 300.
Yeah. I understand your point for sure. Yeah. But maybe, I mean, right now it's a good enough solution. I mean, we've seen like motorcycles like getting away with it, like because of, it's not necessarily a weight thing, but it's also like a volume thing. They they don't want to put an AC converter inside a car, so that you're going to charge DC, you're going to charge on 120 volts.
Yeah. So, I mean, even my lawnmower, I have a Ryobi lawnmower, and the AC to DC charger or converter is external. Mm-hmm. So it's like you plug in this big box and then you plug in. I mean, it's kind of like
laptops are like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Gary Stephen, temperature range makes me cringe on the inverter. 113 degrees doesn't fly in Arizona. If that's the high on the temperature range, that might be a little bit concerning.
I don't know what are the others though. Like how that compares to other.
I mean, they have fans. But, you know, if it's already 113, it's not going to help. Kids, gymnasts, and jockeys will fit in row three. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Gymnasts.
3D printing would also be much slower than casting.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, you can produce thousands of those a day now, those parts.
Yeah. Graham Brown is super excited about the SX refresh. I think that'll be a big, big deal, because there's going to be some, like, specs that are going to be interesting. I feel like
that's the thing here. It's not going to be about Tesla's bottom line per se, because the Model S and X programs are not just will never be big enough to move the overall volume of Tesla vehicles like Model X and Model Y and future vehicles. But if Tesla introduced some new technology that's interesting, like heads up display and or something like that, that could, and then those could eventually trickle down as options on less expensive vehicles. Things like that would be interesting. I'm not saying that a heads up display is coming. I'm just putting an example out there. Yeah.
Tommy A says the turn signals work. You just don't hear the clicks. I think he's referring to we were talking about the MCU being out.
I thought that too, but it was dark outside, and I was looking out for the light on the ground, because I mean when your flasher is on, like you can see light, and I couldn't see anything. So unless I the sound of the signal would come too, but delayed. So I started seeing the light, and I started hearing the sound, but delayed a few seconds.
Yeah, I didn't have anything. And I also did what Mike Ahern is saying. It happened to me today, 2015 model. So he says no turn signals at all. I was in my garage, and I was trying to get the turn signals to work.
Yeah. Well, of course, your thing and my thing was different, because for me it was a reboot of my MCU on Model 3, which is not the same. It's a new MCU.
Right. It's coming up.
Yeah.
Why is there no charging station for electric bikes? There is. They're just plugs, though. You don't need a lot of power for electric bikes.
Yeah.
Motorcycles, you can kind of use the car infrastructure out there.
Yeah.
Lucid should merge with CCIV spec.
Well, that's what we were talking about. But again, I mean, that was Bloomberg reporting that as talks. I mean, Bloomberg is generally fairly reliable, but even them, they were saying like it's just talks right now. It's not like there's a deal like with Portera or with I saw someone mention the NGA too in the talk. That's Lion Electric. That those are done deal. So waiting for my approval. That's it.
Jay says join late. Assuming EV legislation has passed, is it usually for the whole year or only after the date it goes live? Should I wait? I think if they pass something, I'm assuming he's talking about the U.S. federal $7,500 tax credit. Usually they make it retroactive, but
yeah,
there's no guarantee that anything's going to pass anywhere.
Yeah, I wouldn't budget for it, but I would be hopeful that it would pass as a retroactive, especially if it's still in the tax credit form.
I mean, you're not going to get something from like 2019.
No, it would be for this year. Like, for example, if it passed towards the end of the year, but if you took delivery in 2021, it would work.
Right. All right. Proterra is a very unique company. I wanted to invest in GP or MGA, but decided to put everything into HCTC Proterra. Hope that goes well for you. Bit of a gamble.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you understand it's a bit of a gamble, it's fine, I guess.
Jay tipped us $5. Appreciate that, Jay. I'm going to have an extra beer tonight. James Reach, any update from Texas legislature if it will allow Tesla to open retail outlets? Yeah, what the heck?
So I've heard a rumor about that that's in the works. And obviously, so a lot of people assume that it would be part of the deal. Like if Tesla come to Texas, they would have to do it. It wasn't the case. That wasn't the case. Tesla wasn't counting on that. Because also Tesla is not it's not like Michigan. It's not that level of awful legislation. It's bad legislation, but it's not like we cannot service our car kind of legislation like it was the case in Michigan. But yeah, I mean, obviously Tesla is making $1 billion investment, like just fix your laws. It would make sense. So I think what's going to happen, I think it's on the table. I know that the state legislature, like they don't meet that often in Texas. It's not like, government is not as important there in Texas. I mean, it's free market and everything. But no, seriously, the legislation, they meet not as frequently as other places. So I think it's going to be discussed when it comes back this year. And obviously, I think a lot of legislators are going to be much more open to Tesla now than they were. I mean, last effort was like a year and a half ago, something.
All right, SF, and by the way, thank you for the audio tip, says Mercedes EQA announced 20th January. Any thoughts on the EQA?
Yeah, that was announced today that it's going to be revealed on the 20th. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, the EQA, kind of disappointed that it was going to be like a small little hatchback just because, I mean, there's a lot of luxury crossovers that are coming out left and right. So the more the better, the more options and everything. But I felt like a nice little, like not too expensive, but still premium hatchback would have been so fun. Now it's going to be a little bit bigger form factor, but I mean, Daimler is serious in electrification, I think. And so the EQA, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Next up, Hyundai makes very efficient cars comparable to Tesla, and they are very popular in Europe. I think we covered that. I agree. We talked about that. I think I'm going backwards. Anyone know news on graphene batteries?
Yeah, GAC had something today about that. GAC Motors, the big Chinese company, they announced like some kind of graphene batteries, but I have a tough time just taking that without a big grain of salt. So it's just graphene has been touted as the next big thing forever. So until I can actually see a functional batteries that ticks all the boxes and is affordable,
yeah,
I won't get excited about it.
All right, Rob Franz with our last question. First Cybertruck customer will take delivery on what date? And we'll clarify, that's an external customer, not a Tesla employee.
I mean, if Tesla wants to do like a Model 3 thing, for example, you have to use historically the data. I mean, Model Y there was quality issues in the Model Y rollout, but I'm telling you, the ramp up to volume and everything, that was almost flawless from Tesla. But Model 3, if you remember back in 2017 when the first delivery happened, it was a handful of cars, and you just said external deliveries. The first few hundred cars went to employees. So if we have something like that happen, like extremely low volume, but Tesla, to respect their timeline of late 2021, could deliver a few Cybertrucks, I guess, and do it like that. So yeah, maybe December 2021. But I mean, with the kind of backlog we're talking about with the Cybertruck of hundreds of thousands of people reserving it, if you're talking about your delivery, Mr. Rob Franz, I would go with a safer expectation of Q3, 2022.
I was going to say Q2 makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
It just seems like, you know, they're building the factory that eventually will make the Cybertruck. Mm. It doesn't seem like it's possible to get a car out of that by the end of the year. But, yeah, they did wonders in Shanghai. So, all right.
I mean, they could surprise us. I have a reservation myself. Sooner the better. I want it, but
yeah. Same.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, and everywhere we're live. We're gonna be live every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Back next week. Thanks a lot for listening. You can give us a subscribe on YouTube or on all the other apps. If you're just listening on the audio version, you can give us a subscribe to there. That's always appreciated. And a review also makes a big change. We are currently in the process of lining up a few interviews for the show. So it won't be a live show like we do on Fridays. Those will keep going, and we'll keep focus on questions from the public, on the news that came out this week and whatever. But it's going to be some sort of midweek episode that's going to come out with an article, and it's going to feature an interview with someone in the industry. And you're going to be able to listen to the audio version and the video version on YouTube, and I guess we could post it on the socials too. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be coming out hopefully by the end of this month, first few episodes. So sign up, subscribe, and you make sure to hit the notification button too, not to miss it. All right. Have a good one, guys.